You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the second hour of Up North News for this Friday, second day of September. This is normally where you'd say, you know, are you writing the right date on your checks? Nobody writes checks anymore, so I'm not going to tell you that. But if you're still writing August on there, you're doing it wrong. If you're still writing checks, you're doing it wrong. We are going to be talking about politics in a couple of different states as well this hour, including with colleagues of mine from the Keystone, our Courier newsroom outlet in Pennsylvania, where they have Dr. Oz running for a Senate seat, and they have an insurrectionist running for the governor's seat on the Republican side in both of those races. These are interesting times for Republican politicians and, frankly, for Republican voters who wonder if maybe they need to make some kind of a change when you see the campaigns that are being run by people like Dr. Oz, or a lot of the comments that were made recently by Ron Johnson that we went through during the last hour. For Tim Michaels, the candidate for governor, it also has not been the easiest road. After spending probably something like $10 million out of his own pocket to pull off an upset win over Rebecca Clefish in the primary, he then flip-flopped on the maximum donations that could be given to him. He flip-flopped on the Trump endorsement, whether it would be on his website or not. He's flip-flopped on his position on decertifying the Wisconsin election and, you know, how he would handle election integrity. These things and more have not suited him well, because he was already in enough of a pickle simply trying to persuade people that somebody from Connecticut could run for Wisconsin governor, given that he has spent most of the past 9 years living in a penthouse in Manhattan and a multi-million dollar mansion in Connecticut. But there he is on the ballot for Wisconsin governor. There's things that, as a Republican running for governor in this state, you should be able to count on. You know, certainly Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is in essence the shadow Republican Party of the state of Wisconsin. But then there's a whole host of other interest groups that you can normally depend on for an endorsement, and then be able to, you know, tout those as some kind of a tie to, you know, the little people, you know, who work in a grocery store or in real estate or whatever the case may be. But as we're learning from WisPolitics, the Wisconsin Realtors Association has decided against endorsing in the governor's race, saying in essence that between Democratic incumbent Tony Evers and Republican challenger Tim Michaels, the Wisconsin Realtors Association is saying, we're good. We're, you know, they're, either one works for us. Their president, Mike Theo, told WisPolitics the group did its research on both candidates, brought them in for interviews, and then decided against an endorsement. This is not something that folks on the Republican side are brushing off lightly. This is a group that endorsed Scott Walker four times in 2010, in the 2012 recall, in 2014, and again in 2018, running against Tony Evers. So for Michaels, a construction executive, this tells you something. There are also several other groups, WisPolitics reports, that are still considering whether to endorse. They include the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, which frequently endorses Republicans. The same goes for groups that had endorsed Clefish in the primary, like the Wisconsin Builders Association, the Association of Builders and Contractors, the Wisconsin Grocers Association. So these are groups that normally by now are telling they're telling their members, here's who we endorsed. Maybe they're putting some money behind some, you know, promotional ads and things like that. And those things aren't happening right now, because the Realtors Association says that, you know, between Michaels and Evers, they both have records or positions that work for them. Similarly, it's been an interesting time for Republican voters in Minnesota, where the farthest right possible candidates are on the ticket for governor and lieutenant governor. And that has included comments from them about comparing COVID-19 mask safeguards to the Holocaust. Well, they appeared at the Minnesota State Fair yesterday on the radio show of Joe Soucheray, who is probably the premier, most popular conservative talk radio voice there. And I'm sure they thought it was going to be an easy interview, and it probably was in many areas. But Soucheray came back from a commercial break at one point, and they must have given that Holocaust, comparison. And this is what Joe Soucheray told the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor.
Scott Jensen and his running mate, Matt Burke.
And the crowd goes wild.
And I got to tell you, man, before we get into what I think's important, and what I think's important probably doesn't mean much to you guys, but it might. If I hear any more of this Holocaust stuff, I'll never talk to you again. That was just utter embarrassing BS. I don't stand for it. I can't take it. And I got news for you. Women don't intend to stay barefoot and pregnant.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Now,
very good.
Out of the way. The floor is open now. The floor is open. He got everything that he wanted to say out of the way.
You feel better, Joe?
We need desperate fiduciary responsibility.
And so then Soucheray goes on to get to more of the financial matters, that work for him. But, as explained by somebody with the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota, generally speaking, nobody should compare things to the Holocaust unless you're talking about genocide, not the safeguards of keeping somebody safe from a virus. But again, these are the quandaries facing Republican-leaning voters in states across the country. We'll be back with more after this. You're up north. It is a gorgeous morning on Lake Wasota. Apparently, that's going to change later in the day as a cold front starts to move through and bring everybody a chance of scattered showers, maybe scattered thunderstorms today, but then sunny but cooler for the rest of the Labor Day weekend. Mark Jacob joins us, former editor of the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, and we talk about things that have happened in the news in other states, and we also talk about the way that other media outlets have covered them. How are you doing, Mark?
Doing great.
All right. I was mentioning before that I was out to dinner last night, met with my old co-anchor, and we were just enjoying a little break from the usual routine. Well, the usual routine last night included a presidential speech that I've since, watched and read and looked at the coverage of, and I knew it was coming. It was this speech, about the fight for the soul of America and things like that. And the reaction to it has been, I guess, largely predictable. So we'll talk about that anyway. But I wonder how you thought going in, hearing that Biden, who is not on the ballot this year, but, it kind of is because it's the midterms, but he's not directly on the ballot. So him making a speech like this, when you heard he was going to do one for the soul of America, did you consider that to be, a proper thing, a strategic thing, a bad idea? What did you think going in?
I thought it was overdue. I mean, I felt like it is a battle for the soul of America. I mean, it is. I mean, that whole phrasing seems over the top in a way, but these times are over the top. And I felt like, just personally, my personal opinion is that I was a little frustrated when Biden was, calling Mitch McConnell his friend and talking about how, everyone's friends. Well, clearly they're not our friends. Clearly, there are people in the Republican Party, the radical element of the Republican Party is out to make our vote meaningless. And that's an alarming thing. And it's about time he said it. I thought it was a newsworthy event. The cynical part of me thought, well, nobody's going to listen to this, which isn't already convinced. And that is kind of a problem in America today because everyone's in their little silo. So, but it's clearly newsworthy, I would say.
I think so. And Luke, I'm going to have you play cut 10 first, where, the president lays out the basis for this by explaining these are not normal times. Let's listen.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
So here he does call out Donald Trump by name and his supporters. And I guess I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to put it up there anyway, because people are saying, well, this turned it into a partisan speech because he had defeated Trump and Trump might be on the ballot. Is calling out Trump by name, does that change the nature of whether this is a presidential speech versus a political speech, or is that line kind of blurred forever now?
Well, Pat, I feel like that a distinction needs to be drawn between politics and partisanship. And everything that a president does is politics. And defending democracy is a political act. And so, yes, it was a political speech. Certainly it was a political speech. Almost everything that the president of the United States does is political. That was not, but that doesn't make it partisan. I mean, he wasn't saying, you know, vote for Joe or vote for Pete or vote against X. He was talking about what's a clear fact that, frankly, is under-examined in this country in the news media, which is that a major, major political party is out to get us, is out to take down our democracy and turn it into, you know, and just remove our vote as something that matters in this country.
Yeah. And so, Luke, let's play a cut 22, and then we're going to follow it up with 20, where he does talk about, you know, that this is not normal. The rhetoric is moving into a violent area, and it's being based not in any real fraud, but in, you know, in that not liking the election results. So let's hear from President Biden in these two clips.
There is no place for political violence in America, period. None, ever. They don't understand what every patriotic American knows. You can't love your country only when you win.
It really is just a matter of respecting something that, I mean, I don't think you can give George Washington too much credit for saying, you know, we're not going to have a monarchy. And right. Mark, it is no longer radical to say that after a couple of centuries of taking a time out, we in this country once again have a group of monarchists amongst us.
Right. I mean, that the only two things that can happen, according to MAGA Republicans, is that they win elections or they were cheated from winning the elections. And if you go into elections that way, and it really needs to be made really clear, Pat, that Trump went into the 2020 election saying that if he lost, it would be cheating. I mean, before any vote was cast, he was saying things like that. And so clearly, this is just a pretext for the attempt to steal our votes, to make our votes meaningless. And I really like the way Biden made that reference to a violent rhetoric, because that's very worrisome. And when you have Lindsey Graham talking about riots in the streets, and so in effect, they're saying, you know, they're trying to put a gun to our head and say, vote for us or else. I mean, it's not normal. This is not the way things were done. Al Gore got more votes and lost in the U.S. Supreme Court in 2000 in a very questionable decision, but he accepted the results, embraced peace, and we moved on. And yet a really well-conducted election 2 years ago, and this is what we get.
Mark Jacob joins us from Chicago, and the president in a speech in Philadelphia last night also made clear that a party that likes to push itself as law and order and pro-law enforcement, that's got to work top to bottom. And in clip 24, Luke, we hear the president talking about how that has to be with no exceptions if you're going to back the rule of law.
Can you believe it? FBI agents just doing their job as directed, facing threats to their own lives from their own fellow citizens.
It's something that, again, to hear things like defund the FBI, you know, but because they don't like him now, but they sure liked it when James Comey was putting out something about Hillary Clinton late in 2016, kind of boggles the imagination. But Mark, let's turn to some of the media reaction to it. And you know, I don't pretend to have all of it in front of me here, but I did see enough from certain people, amongst them Breonna Keeler from CNN, Ed O'Keefe from CBS, who, for example, well, first off, they just flat out said it was a campaign or a political speech. And it seems to me they kind of missed the forest for the trees here.
Well, yeah, that goes to the partisan versus political distinction I drew to earlier. The thing that get me, and what another person was Jeff Zeleny at
CNN. Yeah, Zeleny.
Who I used to work with, and there's a fine guy. But I felt like they were really missing the forest for the trees, and they were, I can't help this. And having been in the media for 4 decades, I know there's this impulse that when you're bashing some politician who deserves to be bashed, there's this human impulse or this journalistic impulse to want to embrace a chance to criticize the other side, just so you look fair, so I think clearly, they've been reporting a lot about Trump because he's committing horrible felonies. And I think that they welcomed an opportunity to really nitpick at something with their criticism of how there were two Marines standing behind Biden, and that was wrong to use the military in this kind of speech.
And it took pretty much 0 seconds for people to put up photos of Trump and Reagan and both Bushes.
Yeah,
with servicemen and servicewomen as a backdrop. So, media folks, you got to do better if you're going to look for something and not be accused, rightly so, of a double standard in this case.
Right.
Now, go ahead.
Well, and let's just remember that Trump held the Republican National Convention at the White House, which was a shocking breach of all previous precedent. Never should have happened. Never. And that just went by the boards. And so that's the whole, one of the big problems of the media today is this kind of equivalency, where let's find something on both sides so we can appear objective and fair. And I'm just telling you, as somebody who was in the media for 40 years and watched national politics very closely, it's not even these days. It's not. There's some Democrats who are not good and should, Cuomo, who got punished, but the Republican Party has taken a very dark turn, and it's not that the two political parties are not equal in their corruption and their dishonesty. There's a big, big difference. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the news media and you've been following it and you see it in front of your very eyes, it's your obligation to say so. And to say that the Republican Party has become increasingly fascist and corrupt and dishonest, because it has, has.
But they didn't talk about it, because even as the president of the United States is giving an address to the nation, NBC was showing Law and Order, right. CBS was showing Young Sheldon, ABC was airing the game show Press Your Luck. And look, you're not required to cover a presidential speech, but look at it this way. You, the broadcast networks, missed a real chance to talk about real issues in America right now and chose to air crap instead. And what you really did was you told the journalists in your respective newsrooms, you guys don't matter. You could have given them that window to at least talk about these issues and try for your both sides if you need to, but to air a game show instead is just sick.
Well, right. And I can understand this decision possibly we don't want to just give Biden free airtime if he's going to say something partisan, and they didn't know what he was going to say before he said it. So I don't have as much of a problem with that decision as you made. But what I do feel like is, why aren't they, all of the networks, airing primetime specials about the assault on democracy? Why aren't they, if they don't want to just put Biden on the air to say it, why don't they do their own reporting? Why don't they report on in Wisconsin, the assault on people's right to vote and the waste of taxpayer money with just fantasies about election fraud? Why don't they look at DeSantis in Florida and his assault on free speech and his assault on teachers? I mean, there's a giant story here, a giant story about the rise of fascism in America and the assault on free elections. And why isn't CBS doing a big special on it one night?
Yeah, I mean, that again, the network of Murrow. And to come back to, lest I be accused of contradicting myself, I'll come back to Margaret Sullivan's column from a couple of weeks back, where she argued against more live coverage of things. She said, air it a little bit later and fact check it. So fine, you don't run it at 7 p.m. Central Time. But like you said, do a special at 9 p.m. about democracy. Bring up the Biden things that, you know, you thought were or were not appropriate for that. We'll talk more about this on the other side. But first, we're going to take a break and talk to one of my colleagues in Pennsylvania about some big races there. And Mark will join us for that and a bit more coming up next. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back. Friday morning, Up North News. Pat Kreitlow here, joined now by Brett Pransky from the Keystone. The Gander's our outlet in Michigan. And Mark Jacob sticks with us from Chicago. Brett, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we're following up on President Biden's speech last night in Philadelphia. So let's just start right there with some remarks that the president made about why he picked Independence Hall.
Sure. Well, I mean, Independence Hall is where he started his 2020 campaign. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that for a key speech like this, he would come back to an area like that.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, you know, just seemed like the right venue.
Let's listen to what he had to say about it.
I speak to you tonight from sacred ground in America. I'm asking our nation to come together, unite behind the single purpose of defending our democracy, regardless of your ideology.
I think that he made clear that, you know, this is an experiment. It's been a long running experiment, and it has definitely had its ups and tragic downs, but it is an experiment, and that nothing is guaranteed. I would imagine you think that probably can only help amongst Pennsylvania voters, that they're reminded of the Democratic small D experiment that began in their state.
Yeah, I think it is, you know, a great reminder, especially when you think about kind of the makeup of Pennsylvania. I mean, when you look at kind of the state and how it's constituted, it's pretty much right down the middle. The congressional delegation has 9 Democrats, 9 Republicans. The governorship is held by a Democrat, but the state house is run by Republicans. There is this need to come together to get anything done in the state of Pennsylvania. So it makes it a good spot.
So let's get into the races that are going on there right now. And like I've said previously, I don't know if Josh Shapiro, the Democratic candidate for governor, is happy or sad that he gets virtually no attention outside the state, because the Dr. Oz John Fetterman race for U.S. Senate is taking so much more of the oxygen in the room. And that appears to still be the case this week, a week that started with Oz and or his team essentially mocking Lieutenant Governor Fetterman for his health, his recovery from a stroke. It's been a while since I've heard anything, but I'm guessing the Oz team still hasn't recovered from stepping on that rake.
Yeah, it's one of many. It seems like every time they turn around, they step on another one. And I think that they're kind of feeling the pressure, because especially in social media, the Fetterman team has done such a masterful job of inserting humor into the race and, you know, getting their message out and doing it in a way that people can embrace, that that the Oz team is just, they're kind of reaching for anything that they can get. So they saw a moment here where they thought that they could get some traction, ended up overstepping and not really thinking about their message well enough. And so we got what we got, and they ended up, you know, coming out looking really bad, trying to make fun of someone, you know, who had a medical condition.
So, Brett, Mark Jacob here. I was curious about, just to slip back to the Mastriano thing, because to me, that's where this is just my opinion, but Oz is kind of a celebrity character trying to become a senator, but Mastriano is more of this right-wing ideologue, you know, with replacement theory and all this other kind of really kind of radical feelings. Does the Tree of Life tragedy in Pennsylvania a few years ago, does that really work against Mastriano, or is it something that just kind of gone down the river and nobody thinks about it anymore?
Well, I think it's something that works against Mastriano. I mean, this idea of being labeled an extremist, you know, is really hitting home, and for good reason, because, you know, there's a number of labels that you could place on the guy, but he is to the far right wing of the party, you know, and, you know, some of his views can't be called anything but extreme. So it's really easy to tie him to some of these events and so on. And especially when you consider the fact that, you know, he said some pretty explosive things about, you know, about the same community that was victimized at the Tree of Life. And so, you know, it's really easy to pair those things up. And I think it's happening in Pennsylvania.
So I think I read that Trump is going there for a speech for Mastriano. Is that correct? Have you heard that?
Yeah. I think Trump's coming to town. I don't know if we have a date for it yet. DeSantis actually came to town a couple weeks ago. Came to Pittsburgh to do a rally. And, you know, so this idea that, you know, that there's a lot of candidates around the country who are trying to, like, they're scrubbing their websites of some of the more extreme views and things like that. And in Pennsylvania, especially with the Mastriano campaign, they don't really have this option. The only move they have is to dive fully into it, which is what they're doing. Now, the Oz campaign, on the other hand, I don't know what exactly their message is. They seem to be searching. He looks like a character looking for his motivation. You know what I mean? He looks like a TV guy, you know? And so, you know, and he's not really, a lot of these kind of, you know, everyman kind of reaches that the Oz campaign is doing, they're just not working. They're falling flat and so on. So he keeps moving and moving and moving and trying to, you know, trying to find a character that's going to work for him, because apparently being genuine can't.
We're talking right now this morning to Brett Pransky from the Keystone in Pennsylvania. Mark Jacob is joining us from Chicago as well, as we talk about Doug Mastriano, the Republican candidate for governor, the insurrectionist, and then, of course, the Dr. Oz race for U.S. Senate against Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. And also in the news over this past week has been the forgiveness of student loan debts, parts of it by President Biden. And Brett, you wrote something that I think has been written in every state. Certainly I've been writing it from a Wisconsin standpoint. You have a congressional candidate, Lisa Scheller, who comes out against student loan debt forgiveness, and then turns out she had $5 million in PPP loans forgiven. It seems to be a bit of amnesia that is not, it's not limited to states besides Pennsylvania.
Right. And it, you know, it falls into kind of the old trap, which is the idea that Republicans are all for me and none for thee. And, you know, it's really hard to shake that label when you dive headlong into it, you know, in some of these cases. If you're going to come out against a $10,000 student loan forgiveness for, you know, for struggling students and people trying to start their lives, it's good not to have a $5 million check in your back pocket that you're never going to pay back, you know, especially when the taxpayers are picking up the bill. So those kinds of just, you know, this kind of like neck snapping hypocrisy is like, you can't keep doing these things and expect people not to notice. And, you know, in all over the country, that's what's been happening. If it's for working people, it's socialism. But if it's for, you know, one percenters or the CEO class, whatever you want to call them, then it's just good business. And you can't be both of those things at the same time and then present yourself to voters as someone who's actually going to serve them.
Well, no, especially when you note that one in six Pennsylvanians have federal student loans. It's the eighth highest percentage in the U.S. And so this is something that talks to all the voters. One thing that won't talk to the voters in Pennsylvania, to a degree at least, are some Republican campaign commercials, at least as of 2 weeks ago. You noted that the GOP had pulled, you know, $10 million from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and other key races. Now, it was my suspicion, and again, cynical former politician talking here, that while that official Republican money is being pulled out of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and elsewhere, it will be backfilled by, you know, dark money groups and things like that. But I could be wrong. It could be that the total amount of spending trying to help out Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania and Ron Johnson in Wisconsin actually as it isn't going to be up as high as anticipated. What is new there? What are you hearing there?
Well, the NRSC, the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, pulled, you know, I think it was $10.5 million from a number of states, with the largest portion of that being from Pennsylvania. I think $7.5 million of that of that ad buy money was pulled from Pennsylvania. Now, but what happened immediately after is, I can't remember the name of the PAC right now, but it's associated with Mitch McConnell, made a $31 million commitment to the state. So what you're going to see is you're going to see dark money ads over and over and over on a loop everywhere. What you're not going to see is the candidate standing up saying, you know, I am so-and-so and I approve this message. It's all going to be dark money groups. It's all going to be, which means it's probably going to be, everything's going to be below the belt. It's going to be as dirty gets, because the candidate is no longer associated with it. They no longer have to attach their face and their name to it. So they can just dive all the way down, you know, to the ground, which is what they're probably going to do.
What do you think about McConnell's talk about kind of candidate equality being a big problem for the Senate candidates and the Republican Senate candidates? And you do have, we got Oz, who's, you know, stumbling around, and Herschel Walker in Georgia, who nobody with a brain can understand why he's in the race.
Right.
You know, and so it's not, and then McConnell, I think, attempted to walk that back, but he said it, and he was one of those deals where McConnell slipped up and told the truth.
Right.
So do you think that the Republicans are going to have to like focus on the candidates that are not coming across as kind of passengers in the clown car?
Yeah. The only question is, I don't know how many of those there are. I mean, the clown car is quite large. I mean, what we have is some of these, you know, some of these figures in key states and people like Herschel Walker and so on, who are kind of drawing our attention away from the fact that most of the slate are, you know, really extreme candidates by any other measure in any other cycle, you know, that we've experienced, at least in my lifetime. So, you know, and now some of them are trying to moderate their message. They're scrubbing websites and so on. Blake Masters in Arizona is removing all mention of Trump from his website, which is, you know, kind of an exercise in futility. But yeah, that's kind of what we're running into, is the fact that they're pulling all this money from places where they don't think that they can win, but I'm not sure where they're going to spend it on anyone who isn't an extremist, you know, because any, you know, that's pretty much, that's the majority of the slate around the country. I mean, there's just so many of them.
We talked about a quandary that we have here in Wisconsin in our coverage of these races, that so much of it is focused on Ron Johnson rather than Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, because Ron Johnson keeps saying or doing things that are especially noteworthy or wrong. And as I said earlier in the segment here, I sometimes wonder what Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman are thinking about all of this. So let's try to avoid talking about Oz and Doug Mastriano. And what are Shapiro? We've talked about Fetterman recovering from his stroke. What about Josh Shapiro? What are we hearing from him?
Well, the Shapiro campaign is running, you know, a pretty smart campaign. They are pointing at Mastriano's extremism in every opportunity that they get. And they have a lot of opportunities, because it's something that is, you know, that comes out every day. There's a new revelation every day. There's a picture of him in a, you know, Confederate uniform. There's, you know, there's a conversation, video conversation of him, you know, thanking armed supporters who are guarding a statue in a park or something like, you know what I mean? There's all this kind of, you know, right-wing extreme stuff that he does every day, that it's got to be hard for the Shapiro campaign to stay on message in terms of what they want to do for Pennsylvania voters, because every day they're dealing with the next, you know, extreme item that drops, or the next thing that Mastriano does to signal to folks that, you know, that he's going to, you know, that he's really going to make some extreme changes were he to win.
Final thing then, in the minute or so that we have left, is with, and we have this problem here too, so much focus on the marquee races. There are other down ballot races, certainly here in Wisconsin, that are important. What kind of attention is being paid to some key races there?
Well, the we mentioned Lisa Scheller, and her, you know, her opponent is the incumbent Susan Wild in the Pennsylvania 7th. And that's a key race that, you know, Wild beat Scheller in 2020, but things, you know, early on were considered to be, you know, this was a pickup opportunity. Now recent events and so on have put that race, you know, more in the kind of coin flip category. And we also have the Pennsylvania First, where we have Brian Fitzpatrick, a former FBI agent who's notably silent on the recent threats to the FBI, who's, you know, who's kind of, you know, going through the same kind of thing. He had a race that was seen as pretty safe for a while, but now we're kind of treating it as a toss-up.
Interesting. All right. Well, Brett Pransky from the Keystone, thank you so much. Hope we can check in once more before the election, and great to have you on this morning.
Sure. Thanks. Anytime.
All right. Have a great weekend. And then we will continue our conversation with Mark Jacob coming up after this break. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Some breaking news in. The Department of Justice has just released a more detailed inventory of what the FBI seized from Trump's estate at Mar-a-Lago. Mark Jacob continues to join us here. And in one of the notes, it says that in a box or container from the office, 99 magazines, newspapers, press articles, and other printed media. Okay, fine. Two U.S. government documents with confidential markings, 15 U.S. government documents with secret classification markings, 7 U.S. government documents with top secret markings, 69 documents without classification markings. Mark, you and I are both drawn to that other key line in there. What's
the
it say?
The next line is 43 empty folders with classified banners.
43 folders, Mark classified, but they're empty.
Yeah, yeah. What could that possibly be? I mean, who knows? I'm sure that, you know, he declassified the empty folders probably, you know, because, or the, it was classified air in the folders. Who knows what? But the Republicans will come up with some crazy, well, this is a new top secret invisible document that was developed by Trump or something. I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to guess what ridiculous explanations they're going to have for this. But it's raising everyone's eyebrows that there are 43 empty folders that were seized from Mar-a-Lago with classified markings on them. So what was in them to start with? We would like to know.
This is, again, I'm going to go ahead and take ownership of this. This could be hyperbole. I get it. I'll say it anyway. How long was the gap on the Nixon tapes? 18 and a half minutes, right. I believe.
Right.
I'm just going to start to wonder if 43 empty folders is going to be his 18 and a half minutes.
You have to wonder. And just the alarming thing about this is, they found this after, let's remember, they found this after he had these top secret documents in his possession for more than a year. The archives were trying to get them back, and they finally demanded them back. He gave them some. They made a stipulation, a legal stipulation, that was everything. It wasn't, and they knew it wasn't, and then they come, and then they find this, which is all these, you know, top secret documents and empty folders that had classified markings on them. So the possible innocent explanations are just not there. They're just not there.
No, they're not. We were talking before this breaking news came out about the media reaction to President Biden's speech in Philadelphia last night. And I'm just noticing now, and Oliver Willis posted this last night, but I'm just noticing it now. It's a photo of Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressing Congress on December 8th, 1941, the day after a historic event. And he writes it in the style of the New York Times or CNN. In what was billed as a response to the Pearl Harbor attack, President Roosevelt made a partisan attack against fascism, refusing to extend an olive branch to the domestic right-wing America First movement who has sided with Hitler. Yes. Right. Yes. What would, I mean,
right.
I get it. It's humor. It's parody. But it strikes a chord for a reason.
Right. Right. No, it's let's remember the thing that drives me nuts as a former journalist is that this is the biggest story of our lifetime. sitting right in front of their face. I mean, Pat, you know, you and I are veterans. Do you ever remember like a major political party conspiring to overthrow democracy? I mean, did that happen like every couple of years in the rest of your life? It didn't to mind. I don't remember at least. But that's what I'm seeing today. Do you remember? Do you ever remember the U.S. Capitol being assaulted by armed attackers and using bear spray and bludgeoning police officers with flagpoles? Do you remember that happening like every year or so? Is that like normal behavior? No, I don't think so. I think these are extraordinary times, and it's about time for the news media to start acting like it. It's about time for them to act like Pearl Harbor, because this is an attack on everything we hold dear in this country.
It just brings me back to, well, I mean, what we've had for years since Trump first came down that escalator, and whether there has been nearly enough self-examination in media circles. And, you know, it certainly seems that way for those of us who engage in it or who have been part of it. But, you know, then you get out there and you talk to more folks, you know, friends, neighbors, who all have their lives, you know, they all mean well. And, you know, just they don't want to be bothered. They've seen, again, the hyperbole that comes from, you know, all parts of the political spectrum. And as a result, you have this kind of boy who cried wolf sense that's out there. Right. And it's really concerning, Mark, because these are people that they've called out. The Trump wing has been referring to journalists as fake news from the very beginning. And I don't feel like those outlets have done nearly enough to counter that and to promote the value of a free press and a democracy.
No, and the real problem is that so many members of the news media feel like to even defend themselves makes them look partisan. And that's how the right wing has had the news media in a trick bag, because they can just bash enemy of the people, and yet the news media mostly can't fight back, because that would make them look like they were taking a side in this.
Yeah. Now I am encouraged by some of the other responses to it. One saying, if a speech about defending democracy strikes you as overtly political, you may be part of the problem. And then the singer John Legend tweeted, when the president comes out as anti-fascist and pro-democracy and you feel attacked, perhaps you need to do some introspection. So I guess we should,
I love that tweet. That
we should close, yeah, close on that better note, that maybe more people are recognizing. I think the number's growing. It's just whether it's growing fast enough.
Right. I do think things are turning, but it's really important for people to talk to their family and friends and say, this isn't the same old sharks versus jets, Democrats, Republicans crap that you've been trying to ignore for your entire life. This is a real threat, and you need to take it seriously and vote.
Okay, now finally, you've left the Tribune, you've left the Sun-Times, everything that you're doing. Based on Ron Johnson's remarks earlier in the week, can he coax you back out of that office with a few bucks get back into the labor force?
That's how we're going to solve the need for labor. You know, we don't want to have, you know, regular hardworking immigrants working or anything else. We need retirees. So yeah, I'm going to apply to, you know, to start, you know, to drive an Amazon truck right away. And if I respect people who do that, that's great work. I'm not like denigrating it anyway. I'm just saying I'm not going to do it because I worked really hard and I'm like semi-retired right now.
It's not really a sound policy proposal.
No,
Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Have a great holiday weekend.
All right, you too.
All right, thanks so much. More in our next hour. You're up north.